The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, everyone. Happy Monday to you. Welcome to Afternoons with Mike. I have three guests today all lined up for you. On the line with me right now is Shannon Carroll. Shannon is with the Redemptive Love Farm. And that's an area, it's in the area of Tallahassee. Now, that doesn't really tell us what you do, but you use animals, farm animals, and some other animals that are much more exotic in a whole variety of petting zoo ways, in kind of using these animals in even weddings and special nativity scenes. Sounds very interesting, so I'm really excited to hear this story. Welcome to my program, Shannon.
Thank you.
Well, how in the world did you get into the business of these animals at Redemptive Love Farm?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in Orlando, Florida, going to Disney World, playing video games. Definitely not a farmer. So my husband and I began this journey, but I guess it starts a little bit before our actual farming journey, as to what got us into it. Do you want me to just start at the beginning?
Yeah, start at the beginning. This is very cool.
Okay, so my husband and I were married for about 6 years. We were living the American dream. We had a brand new house, mortgaged house in a beautiful neighborhood, and we had brand new cars. We were both working full time, and we met a man named Jesus, and he saved us from our sin, and we realized that we wanted to glorify him with our lives, and so he just turned everything upside down. The first thing he did was put the love of children on our hearts, and so we ended up becoming foster parents, and we spent a year going through that process, and he also at the same time put getting out of debt on our heart. So we also began to work a bunch of extra jobs, the whole Dave Ramsey gung-ho plan.
You had the debt snowball thing going, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So we're actually currently debt-free. So 7 years, I guess I'll fast forward 7 years. We did make it. We got debt-free. But part of that process was selling our beautiful mortgaged house and moving into a trailer in the country and selling our cars and getting, you know, beaters basically for, you know, $4,000 cash. So but that was part of our journey that we did with our foster children. So a year after God put it on our hearts that we wanted to care for the orphan just like he cared for the orphan, we became foster parents, and we were placed with not one, but five foster kids within our first 6 months of being licensed. I don't know what it's like to have one little baby, bringing him home from the hospital. I had a 9-year-old, 7-year-old, 4-year-old, 10-month-old, and 6-week-old. And that was my welcome to parenting journey.
Wow, that is amazing. All of this now debt-free again and living in a, you said a trailer in the country?
Yeah, we moved into a 600-square-foot trailer so that we could pay off all of our debt. So we did live in our, you know, our mortgaged house for a couple years as we were, you know, that snowball was just starting with credit cards and car payments. And then we took that big step and we're like, you know what, the kids need, and really the kids help spur on that, that debt-free movement in our lives, because we realized that our kids needed a mom and a dad more than they needed mom and dad working multiple jobs outside the home to keep the mortgage paid. So we gave up our beautiful mortgaged home and we moved into the country on 4 acres, and we fell in love with outdoor living because we didn't have a lot of inside space. So we did, living there for that year though allowed us to literally pay off every last penny of our debt. We fixed up that property, we sold it for a plus, and then we bought a bigger, a 2,000-square-foot mobile home on 12 acres.
Mm-hmm. So now is that where you're still living at this point?
Yes.
All right. Now, even that idea is really unique and a story in its own. The whole Dave Ramsey thing, as you said it, the whole getting out of debt and changing. He has a statement that he makes regularly. Live today in order that you can live a different way later on. So you live, you change the way your lifestyle is, and that's exactly what you did. Now, you also became foster parents in the sight of all of this, and that, I know, it carries on its own responsibilities, including expenses, but you were able to get out of debt, do all of that, and still stay out of debt.
Yeah, so we sacrificed a ton, and God took care of us. It's funny, when we give up all of our own control of our lives, it's funny how just little things, people calling us randomly and saying, hey, we have, too much leftover produce, and it's going to go bad before I can sell it this weekend. You guys want it? And, just people love, just Jesus loving on us through people during that time, it really strengthened our faith. Having almost nothing while we were really trying to get debt free.
That is amazing. Are you still fostering today?
We're not. So our story started with our 5 foster kids. We have fostered 12 children. Sorry, I got beeped out with another call. We have fostered 12 children total, but we adopted 7. So we are adoptive parents of our. We did adopt those 7 or those 5 original children, and we've adopted 2 more since then.
So when you said you became like an overnight parent, you're not just meaning that from a foster mom, you actually adopted these as your own children.
Yeah, so we had a prayer when we went into this that we would say yes to any call that God brought our way, we would say yes to. So we did not realize that all 5 of the children come up for adoption. So we really did try to counsel and minister to the families, and we really did pray for reunification for the kids and the parents' sake, but it just didn't happen that way. And so they were already our kids at that point. So we did adopt them as our own, and then we did keep those relationships open in a safe way.
That is a marvelous thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for your heart to do that. Now, we're along here. You're living in the country. I get that. You're living in a mobile home, which is a great thing to do. And you are now, though, thinking about a new direction. And how is it that this animal love farm come into play?
Yeah, definitely. So we needed the space just so our kids could have room to run outside the neighborhood and things like that. But what we didn't realize would come with that is that I was an animal rescue prior to God changing our direction of our life and us becoming foster parents. And I kind of put that on a back burner when I was parenting so many children at once and learning how to be a mom of humans and not just animals. So we only had like our 2 family dogs at that time. But once we got land, we started to realize that, and where we live, you're not allowed certain species in the city where we were in our neighborhood home. But once we got out to the county in the country, we were able to take in any kind of livestock, horses, pigs, goats, things like that. So with that being said, we were the people prior that, say, my husband's coworkers or people would know us in the neighborhood would bring us a stray cat or a stray dog. All of a sudden, people were calling us about pigs and goats and chickens, and our menagerie of animals grew very quickly. So when we had about 50 animals that we were taking care of, and to kind of sidetrack a little bit, is our kids, we started to see something in our kids and our foster kids and adopted kids that we stopped expecting to see from them because of their trauma and the things they've gone through. But we started to see empathy and responsibility and compassion grow in a way, because a kid that has been hurt by adults and humans, can connect with an animal in a way that's so much different. And it was able to kind of open them up to that love and empathy that we later were able to cross over to humans. But anyway, so that's kind of why we allowed those animals to come into our life, because what we were seeing grow in our kids that we were so excited about. But eventually I had to come, my husband came to me and he's like, look, we're, you know, snowballing, we're still paying off all our debt. You know, we've got this little farm, but he was kind of like, so what are we doing with all these farm animals? You know, we can't, it's a lot. We're paying for 7 kids and now 50 animals. So what are we doing? And I told him, I was like, I had a great idea. I was like, I'm just going to start a petting farm pony ride company and that will pay for the animals. It'll be great. And we did. So in 2016, after we had had the kids for, I think, 5 years at that point, in 2016, we became a licensed and insured company, and we started doing petting zoos and pony rides, and we, you know, travel to backyards for the birthday parties to take all little birthday party guests around on a pony ride, or we'd bring our animals to nativities, things like that. And we've been now in business for 5 years, and we have just quadrupled. We have staff now. We run a full, we have big open farm days. We have a huge, I mean, it's a full-time job now.
That is amazing. All of just beginning really from the people dropping off animals and asking you if you can watch them and take care of them. How did you get into some of the more exotic breeds of animals?
Yeah, so I assume you're talking about like our llamas and camels.
Yes.
I,
not every day do I talk to somebody that owns a camel.
Yes, and we have two. We have Chewy and Humphrey. And Chewy is our newest rescue. He came from Ohio. He desperately needed a home. And then Humphrey, we were able to take in last year and bottle raise him because he was separated from his mother. But yeah, it's just word of mouth is knowing different people in this community who do this kind of business all over the country. Social media kind of connects people. You know, there's lots of petting zoo owners and different groups like that online. And we kind of all stick together. It's a very unique business to be in. So the good ones in that group tend to stick together, and we notify each other of animals needing homes all over the country. And then I'm also the Florida coordinator with the Southeast Llama Rescue. So we do a lot of work for them. And then we do have 10 llamas here at our farm.
So. Wow. Now, what kind of care does a llama need? Is it any different than any other of these animals that you would have? It just, these are unusual animals to actually see, I would think, in Florida.
Yeah. So they are native to South America, Peru, Argentina, Bolivia. So their temperatures that they, I guess, were originally acclimated to would be, you know, in the 50s during the day and then down to almost zero at night. So obviously Florida is very different than that, as if we get down to the 50s, we're kind of, well, I love the cold weather, so I think we're lucky. But yeah, they aren't as heat tolerant as other animals, so there are things that we've done. But we've learned a lot, and our vet has learned with us over the past several years. And I think the past 3 years, we feel like we really have raising these guys in the southern region kind of down pat. Camels, on the other hand, are very heat tolerant. They're a little bit different, though, because they're typically acclimated to the dry regions, and
right.
We're a very moist or humid area here in Florida. You know, so there are things that we watch out for. But so far, we've done really great. I've got my vet in my pocket, though, so I've got her cell phone number, and if any little thing, you know, we're right up there. Our vet is probably one of our best friends and helping keep all these animals healthy.
So I know you have ponies as well. Looks like maybe even Shetland ponies.
Yeah, we have a couple ponies and horses. As my kids have aged, you know, we've tried to take in and keep a couple more horses on hand, just because they're growing out there. They're growing out of their little ponies that they started to learn to ride on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you take this business, you take it out to, like you said, backyards. How does that work, and how can people contact you? What would be a typical event where you bring animals out to someone's home?
Yeah, So I think backyard birthday parties are probably our primary. What we do every weekend, like this past weekend, we had 6 backyard birthday parties that we traveled to, and then we had 3 parties here at the event, here at the farm that we hosted. So we have multiple traveling crews that take these animals out to backyard birthday parties. So there might be a party that wants just a little petting farm with little goats and chickens and bunnies and sheep, and then we might have a place that might want a riding unicorn. So we'll dress up one of our ponies as a unicorn and take all the little girls dressed as princesses for a ride right there in their backyard. So, you know, our goal really has been just to share the love of animals in the way that we've seen it, you know, help our kids and share that with the community.
How far out do you travel with these animals?
Yeah, we've gone we try to stay no more than 2 hours. So Gainesville, Jacksonville, and then all the way to, say, like Tipton, Georgia, and Dothan, Alabama. So, and then all the way down to like Panama City, St. George Island. So we kind of have this 2-hour radius that goes all the way around Tallahassee.
Oh, that is amazing. And the website, in case anybody is wanting to contact you, is redemptivelovefarm.com.
Yep.
And that sounds like so fun. Now, do your kids take part in the business with you as well?
Yeah, definitely. My kids are growing up real fast, so they're kind of – I've got 2 10-year-olds that I consider my kids, and then I've got 2 15-year-olds who are my teens. I've got a 17-year-old daughter who does have severe special needs, so she does go to normal public school, but I homeschool the other 4, and then my 2 oldest of my 7 are 18 and 19 now, and they're in college, so – it's hard to say my kids because, yeah, my college kids work for me, my teens work for me, and then my kids do come along with me if I have a big event.
Yeah, I found it to be such that I refer to my 40-year-old daughter as my kid. So it's still once a kid, always a kid to you.
Yes.
This is such a marvelous story. And you and your husband, you guys are very involved, obviously, with these animals on a daily basis. Just the picture on your website, it looks like you have a couple of beautiful Dalmatian dogs as well.
Yeah, we do. My husband's actually, my husband and I and our oldest son, and then my daughter is getting her certification, but the 3 of us are volunteer firefighters here in our area.
Ah.
We live about 12 miles from where our nearest fire station, our city-run fire stations are. So there's about a 12-minute response time out here, and if somebody was in need of life-saving CPR, you have 4 minutes to deliver that before very severe consequences would set in.
Sure.
So we thought we're younger, we're healthy, we're able-bodied. Why not? Because we do live in a community, obviously, where land was less expensive, so that we could buy more of it. But we do live in a community that has a lot of elderly here that have lived here for years and years. And so we figured we're able-bodied in the community. We might as well do it. So anyway, we have lots of fire trucks on our farm because we have lots of response vehicles. And when my husband got his certification completed, we added a Dalmatian because that has just been one of our longtime wish lists.
You guys really, truly are inspirational, and thank you for not only what you've done with these wonderful animals and giving kids the delight and the joy of that kind of experience, but for being a foster parent extraordinaire. Thank you for your example. Shannon Carroll, my guest this segment. Shannon, the website is redemptivelovefarm.com, and you'll go all the way to Gainesville. So that's you're in our area.
Yeah, we will.
That's wonderful. God bless you and Merry Christmas with all of the wonderful things you're doing with the nativity scenes with your animals. That's just going to be a wonderful thing. And we appreciate you taking the time to be on our program.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
All right. God bless you.
All right.
Don't go away. We will be right back. I am in the studio right now with Laurel Ordonez. And Laurel is CEO and founder of Queenly Consulting. It's a group that exists to encourage, empower, and equip women in business. That's a fun goal for you right there. Welcome, Laurel. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here.
So is this your first time on radio?
No.
Oh, you've been on a program before.
I have.
Great. Well, I know that you are a graduate with a master's degree at one of my favorite places in Orlando, and that's Full Sail. I've been out there a number of times, got friends out there. My daughter has recorded there. So has she. First time, it was three of my four kids did an album out there. It's a great place. And talk about something that is highly technologically advanced. That's the place, right?
Absolutely. It's an incredible school with tons of opportunity. And they really, really take care of not only their students, but their alumni.
Well, that's wonderful. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up in this area or where are you from? All of that.
So I am not a Florida native. I grew up in Tempe, Arizona. I lived in Tempe till I was 15.
Oh, my.
So, you know, metropolis.
You didn't even know what humidity was.
Absolutely. Well, monsoon season can get pretty crazy.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was always dry out there.
Oh, man. No, we don't have air conditioners in Arizona. You have swamp coolers. And so most of the year, you're great. But in summertime, your clothes are like wet because of the humidity.
Mm.
But it doesn't last long.
Okay, that's news. I did not realize that.
And then from there, I transitioned to Worthington, Minnesota, which is in the southwest corner, a town of 10,000 people. So I went from right outside of ASU campus to exact opposite, a small town where I finished high school, got my first, my associate's degree, and then I had my first child.
Okay. And in an entirely different climate.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. You've gone from Arizona arid weather to some of the coldest weather in the nation.
Yes. I miss the snow, though. I'm going to be honest.
Are you kidding me?
No, absolutely not.
I have to tell you, I don't miss it. I've slid off too many times on too many embankments in the snow, and it's just not fun at all for me, but I'm glad you enjoy it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I guess that's why I like Florida so much. Well, okay, so how did you come to know the Lord?
So I accepted Christ for the first time when I was 9 years old. We went to a small Baptist church in Arizona, my mom and I, and I learned to love the Lord there. So on my 9th birthday, I was baptized. And when I was 9, I actually wanted to become a pastor. Things happened in family. We left the church, and unfortunately, we never returned.
Mm.
And so I went on a journey, is what I like to call it. God was always with me, but I wasn't always with him. And when I was 17, I found myself pregnant with my first child. And so I dropped out of school. I was, you know, just trying to be a mom and do the best that I could.
Mm-hmm.
And then had my second child when I was 19. And then when I was 20 years old, I realized I had these two kids. I had gotten my GET. I was you know, in college, but I knew something was missing.
Right.
And I knew that if I wanted to do something different for my kids, really giving them Jesus was probably the best thing I could do.
Right. There's nothing better than to give them the Lord.
Yes, absolutely.
And in the way that we live and what we talk about, obviously God's call's got to be on them too. But that's just a wonderful thing to see that as a parent when your kids come alive in Christ.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I found Calvary Baptist Church, which was the name of the church that I went to when I was younger, it was happened to go on a old style Baptist revival weekend. And I recommitted my life to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And really, God has been moving in incredible ways ever since that moment.
Mm. So tell me a little bit about what those early days were like in light of the fact that you have now a heart. Was the heart that you had for your kids, did that just kind of mature out in a desire to plant that same thing in other women?
I think a lot of it has been from my personal journey in trying to find my own worth. And really learning who it is that I identify with and who is God to me, because the longest time it was really hard for me to see God as a father. You know, Lord, friend, provider, but seeing God as a father was really, really difficult for me. And I think a lot of women walk through that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't know how much God loves you, it's hard to love yourself truly and really value your talents. And as moms, we're constantly giving of ourselves, whether it's to our children, our community, our husbands, our churches. it seems like it's expected for us to consistently be operating from an overflow. And sometimes that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And so really seeing women and young women value who they are and walk tall in those unique giftings is really, really important. And I think that it is absolutely transformative, not only in a young person's life, but also in a mom or a young professional. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely incredible to see someone own the calling that God has placed on their life.
Now, you were facing a couple of things called children with a college experience as well. And we all know that college can be just a very difficult time from a standpoint of making the grades and keeping up with all the work. But you had the added pressure of two small children and being a single mom at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you have somebody in your life, once you made that return to the Lord, did you have somebody that was helping you along?
So I had my parents when the kids were little who would help me. And Minnesota has a lot of really great programs that help working parents with daycare. I was really able to balance everything pretty well. But when I was 22, I met the man who would be my husband.
Mm.
And so we have been together. Actually, Sunday we'll be together for 10 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And he has walked alongside me. It hasn't always been easy. We really had to grow up together along with growing up with these two young boys. But it has been, it's been so, so amazing to raise my boys. And even though it's a blended family, it's not a broken family.
Mm-hmm.
And his support when I was trying to do all the things. And I was juggling all the things and sometimes feeling like I was failing at all the things was really amazing. And he has been that rock, that Ephesians 5 type of man that I needed to mm-hmm. walk along my side.
That's wonderful. And I'm sure your kids love him as if he were their own natural father.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's wonderful. Now, you've got a degree in PR and mm-hmm. and maybe some marketing. I don't know if that's part of what you've your experience line would be. How is it that you came to have this call to form this organization and begin to pour out into other ladies?
Oh, man. I have my bachelor's is in hospitality management, and my master's is in public relations. I've worked the past 3 years in a startup environment in an experiential marketing company.
And in COVID as well. Yeah.
Yes.
that's made an impact on everybody.
The company I worked for did very well. We were able to position ourselves as a resource and remain profitable. We actually 3x'd our revenue in a global pandemic.
Wow.
It was incredible, but we focused on being a resource for our community. And that's always been so important to me. So I wanted to use not only my public relations master's degree, but my business development background plus my digital marketing experience mm-hmm. to really empower business owners, women business owners, to know how to market their businesses and to know how to grow their businesses and not just live, but thrive like God has called us to, because we serve a more than enough God. And so he positions people and gives us all knowledge. And I wouldn't be who God is calling me to be if I kept that knowledge to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really feel that God put it on my heart to empower other business owners, other women business owners, to coach them to run better businesses.
Now, from your perspective, how would it be different for a female business owner versus a man that owns the business? What makes that harder?
I am naturally a coach. And I feel we start to form very close relationships with our coaches. And so just to keep things safe, you know, men pray for men, women pray for women.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for me to provide all of me when I'm working with women.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't work with impact-focused businesses or businesses that are owned by men. I think the unique challenge that women have in the workplace is that we wear so many hats. Work doesn't stop when we leave the office. It's taking care of kids. It's leadership roles in the community. It's being a the wife that we're called to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you wear all the hats that you need to wear and be good at all of them? It's just not easy mm-hmm. to do that. And so being able to step in with the background that I have and say, okay, how do we make it so that you are doing the absolutely what you're best at in your business? And then we automate, we get leads this way. We work on your presence over here so that the women in business are showing up where they need to the most.
What do you think is the greatest need or maybe the biggest deficiency in a lot of startup businesses, whether they're owned by ladies or guys? What do you see that being in this time frame?
Information overload.
Hmm.
There are so many ways to do everything. And that I think sometimes people get stuck in where do I start? How I can do digital, I can do print, I can do newspaper, I can have a website, I can be on social media, I can go to networking events. What's most effective? Where do I start?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to work for my business?
Because it seems like these things are always changing. All of the social media companies, they're changing, they're dynamic in the sense that what you did last year may not work right now. And that's got to be something that you have to face every day.
It's tough. And you do have to stay on top of trends. And the biggest advice I can give to anyone is you can't be good at something that you've never tried. And so sometimes you just have to try. You just have to start and be willing to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And know that you're going to walk away that I did XYZ and it didn't work for my business. So I'm going to try something else. Social media is such an important tool in anyone's business. It allows you to stay top of mind for your clients, for your audience. Do I think you're going to become a millionaire on social media? Probably not, but it allows you to build trust, build a relationship digitally with the clients you have or people who may want to be your clients.
Mm-hmm.
And people almost get to know you through your social presence so that when they're deciding who they want to do business with, they get a sense of who you are and it's an easy decision for them to make. Mm.
Hopefully we're coming out of this COVID time and mm-hmm. we'll be able to say one day past COVID or post COVID. That would be great to be able to do that. But your work is going on. Businesses, they have to go on. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing happen for the new year?
I think in-person events are going to be coming back. People want to experience the businesses that they're working with. It's more than just going to a store and buying something, especially in a local atmosphere. Anybody can go online and buy something from Amazon, but it's your relationship that you build with those local businesses, that experience that you're providing when someone shops with mm-hmm. you or, you know, you serve them through your services. It's the experience that keeps them coming back. So I think that we are going to be doing more in person in 2022. And then from a digital perspective, really video is king.
Mm.
We apparently have the attention span of goldfish, 8 seconds.
It's that bad, right?
Yeah. So, pushing engaging video content across digital platforms is something that all businesses are going to want to take advantage of.
Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's easier to do that right now than ever before. But that doesn't mean that the digital content that is being produced by a lot of users is really all that great, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. But a lot of it's working. So one thing that I think the global pandemic did for businesses is that it took the pretentiousness of having to be perfect out of business. We now see people's backgrounds, it's their homes, it's their kids, it's their dog that's barking. And people are craving authenticity because we have lost our human connection because we just weren't able to see each other. We haven't been able to engage with one another.
Mm-hmm.
We've been masked for mm-hmm. a year, year and a half.
Yeah, we have. And it seems like that has gone 10 years. It really feels that way to me. What do you see now 2022 happening for Queenly?
Queenly Consulting was really built out of a God-sized dream. So pouring into businesses that are going to pour into the next generation. So our plan for 2022 is to launch a nonprofit organization that will provide discipleship and mentorship for our young people, really preparing them for adulthood. So taking them through the book of John so they know Jesus, Ephesians so Ephesians so that they know the love of God, and then individually taking our young men through the book of Daniel, our young women through the book of Esther. So our next generation, they can start to identify with the people that God moved through in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And especially with Daniel and Esther, they were just teenagers and God used them in such powerful ways.
For such a time as this, I think of Esther's story, the challenge that she had, the amazing courage that it took for her to do what she did. Mm-hmm. And she had that guiding hand. I mean, you think about, Mordecai's help to her in her life. And that in a way is the kind of voice that we all need. We need that assurance. We need that, I guess you could say, encouraging voice mm-hmm. that he brought in her life. And when he said those famous words, you could be here for such a time as this. We're in a time that's like no other. And I believe there are many moments for a lot of young people and business people that they're going to be able to rise up and answer the call on them as well.
Absolutely. And we want them to feel empowered to do so. Mm-hmm. That we want them to have that if I die, I die mentality, because God's with them. And if God's put it on your heart to walk through something, to move through something, to dream something into existence, he's given you the ability to do it, and you have to know that and have confidence in it.
I agree. And, I love the book of John, too. That was a book that the Lord really used in my life to reveal himself to me. So I think you're right on track. That's a great book. Give us your website.
It's www.queenlyconsulting.co.
All right. Laurel Ordonez, it's been great having you here today. Thank you for coming by and sharing your dream. The vision, I love how you put it, a God-sized dream. Absolutely. It's going to take God to fulfill it, but he is a faithful God.
He sure is. Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll be back. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Back again here on the program Afternoons with Mike, and I now have as my guest Megan Aldridge. Megan is, she's a number of things. She is a doctor of audiology, and she's also a realtor, a member of EXP Realty, and she's also a believer and a member of the Christian Chamber. Megan, welcome to my program.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate being here.
I just am amazed at the amount of titles that you carry. You've been around.
I've done a few things.
Yes, you have. Well, first of all, tell me a little bit about where you're from, how you came to know the Lord.
Right. Okay. So I'm originally from the Midwest. My family sources itself out of Wisconsin, the Milwaukee area of Wisconsin. Around the age of 9, we moved to Minneapolis for a few years. And at the age of 13, my family became Floridians and have been ever since.
And you were very happy about that move.
No, I was not. No, the winter before my parents announced that we were moving to Florida, I had just gotten my very first set of downhill skis. And I was ready to become a skier. And so when they said we were moving to Florida, I kindly pointed out that this was not going to work out for me.
Yeah. No snow down here.
Yeah. So I had to retire my skis. I did keep them propped up in my room as a teenager, hoping I would one day move back. But I've been a Floridian ever since 1987 and enjoy it and love it here and met my husband here. And as far as meeting the Lord, I was raised Catholic, as was my husband, raised Catholic. But while I was at the University of Florida as a
go
member,
Gators.
Go Gators,
That's right.
I went to a Catholic church retreat my senior year in college. And it's kind of a funny story, but we were advised to start learning how to read the Bible. And we got put into tiny small groups.
Was it a Curcio?
No, I think it was an Alpha retreat. Mm-hmm. If that's okay. Yeah, you're stretching me back a few years, so mm-hmm. I'm going to try to pull that out. But I'm pretty sure it was an Alpha retreat, and it was 1996. And we got into small groups and were handed Bibles, and no one in my group knew how to read a Bible. And so one girl suggested, Well, my sister told me that I should just let the Bible fall open, and whatever page it lands on is what God wants me to read.
Wow.
And so not having any other instruction on Bible reading, we went with that.
Oh, and, my goodness.
Then we were instructed to go to a corner of the room by ourselves and start reading the Bible as we were instructed. And I did. I went into a corner of the room. Now, up to this point, there is a hymn called Here I Am that's a very popular Catholic hymn. And it's always been kind of my song with God. And I felt very connected to God when I would sing it. And I went into the corner of the room, let the Bible fall open as instructed. And the first words my eyes laid on was, Here I Am. And I burst into tears. I felt the conviction of the Holy Spirit. I laid on my face. I'm going to cry. Laid on my face and gave my life to the Lord in that one moment.
Oh, wow.
I always say Jesus Christ himself saved my soul.
While that might be not the most helpful advice, it certainly was wonderful for you.
Well, it worked in the moment, and it springboarded my life as a born-again Christian in a way that worked for me in that moment where I could receive it. Now, I did not know I had been born again. It was not until I had graduated shortly thereafter, and I went to go work for Publix on the summer, as I tended to do on summer breaks to make some money. And someone at Publix invited me to Calvary Chapel in Fort Lauderdale. My family was living in South Florida at the time, and I was invited, and I went. And that's when I realized I had been born again. The pastor, Bob Coy, was the pastor down there at the time. He did an altar call.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what an altar call was. But the minute he called people down to accept Jesus as their savior, I knew exactly what had happened to me in the corner of that retreat room so many months prior. But until I had heard that and had been to a non-denominational church, I didn't even know what had happened to me. All I had known was I was different. I was changed.
Sure you
and
were.
I was had dedicated my life to Jesus.
Did you get baptized shortly after that?
I did not get baptized shortly after that because I didn't even know that that was the natural course of things. I did a few years later and got baptized over by Dinky Dock here in Orlando. And so eventually did, but I had to learn from square one what it meant to be a Christian, really a born again Christian, that is.
Yes.
From square one. And that took a lot of going to church and learning how to read the Bible the right way.
The amazing ways of God, the way that he had such mercy upon you, and thinking that in a song that was even very meaningful, your song,
yes,
is what he used to touch your heart through his word.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, really, right into my soul.
That's a wonderful story. The truth is that God's hand is upon each and every person like that. If they could look back, they would see, too, his grace carrying them.
Yes.
When they didn't realize that they were being carried, or they didn't even know that that's what that meant, just like you. You didn't know that that was a born-again experience until later.
Yes, much later. And I love to tell the story because I want it to give hope to people that if you have loved ones who are not saved, it does not mean that they have to follow a certain path for God to find them. God will find them in the place that works for them and save their souls in a place that speaks to them when his time is right.
His grace is sufficient.
Absolutely.
And for you, you became a doctor in audiology. Now, what led you to want to go into that field? Because that's a lot of study beyond just an undergraduate degree. What was it that drew you to that?
Well, that's a very God-ordained story as well. I was a junior at the University of Florida. I had originally gone to college to become an orthodontist, and I was volunteering at Shands Hospital in the dental clinics and taking my pre-dental courses and struggling in biology and organic chemistry and feeling like maybe my path wasn't headed in the right direction to become an orthodontist. And it was the policy of the university at the time that your major could not be undeclared, but I knew that I needed to make a change. And so I went down the list of majors in the catalog. Back then we had paper catalogs that you went down, and I went down the list of majors and fell on audiology. And it was the only major that didn't make me feel a little nauseous. And so I decided I would declare audiology as my major and take Audiology 101 and took that first class and felt like a big light bulb went on for me. Like, this was definitely, I loved the science of it. I loved the helping nature of it. I loved that it was, I have a cousin, my father's cousin, who is hearing impaired, and I'd always enjoyed trying to connect with her through sign language and through her hearing assistive devices. And I felt like it was very congruent for me. I immediately got straight A's, so it was something I could excel at.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I wanted to take it all the way and become a doctor of audiology. It was a very peaceful choice for me.
Well, that's a great story. You're just full of great stories.
Thank you.
Right. That's another God-ordained thing. The fact that anybody could be studying for something as intricate as audiology and get straight A's just because it's just working for you.
Well, I think when you find what God has intended for you to do, at least for a season of life, you do find an element of ease to it. You know, it wasn't painful to study. It was exciting to study. There was always a drive to learn more. And I think when you found something like that, I think that's a good sign that God has you on a path, at least for a season of your life, that mm-hmm. that's where he wants you to be. And honestly, if I hadn't become an audiologist, it's unlikely I would have met my husband.
So you practiced audiology in Orlando?
Yes, yes. After I graduated with my master's degree from Vanderbilt University in Nashville, my parents, while I was in school there, had relocated from South Florida to Central Florida. And so I had been home on breaks and thought Orlando was a nice place.
Mm-hmm.
And I had missed my parents after being away for 6 years. So I thought, I'm going to move in with mom and dad and get a job. And I did. So I started at an ear, nose, and throat clinic in Orlando and started working a real grown-up job in audiology and loved it quite a lot.
And you've been a part of the Christian Chamber now for a number of years as well.
Right, right. So as I went along being an audiologist, I had found some great roles that I was really excited about, but I decided to have children and decided to move into a part-time role in audiology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I eventually, we became real estate investors and started investing in properties for passive income, which led me to get my real estate license. And I thought, well, how am I going to build a business, right? How am I going to grow this business from nothing to something? And I found out about the Christian Chamber through one of their founding members, Tom Marks. He and I met up at a Christmas in July event for the Christian Help Organization. And he and I got talking at that event. He's like, you really need to become a chamber member.
How does it help you the most?
I think it's all encompassing. I think the first component is that you're surrounded by believers who genuinely want to see your business grow. It's the best group of people I've ever been aligned with in that they truly have a heart for seeing your business grow, whether it is a direct referral or an indirect referral, somebody that they know that they know that they know, but also the prayer behind it all. You know, I mean, they want to pray with you. They want to see you succeed. And then obviously the opportunities at each of the events to not just keep the chamber aware of what's going on in real estate in Central Florida, but also to hear what's going on with them and their real estate challenges or plans. Or, you know, I take a lot of joy in making sure that everyone in the Christian Chamber is aware on what the Central Florida real estate market is doing.
What would come most natural to you? Would it be the real estate side or would it be all your studies in audiology?
I live and breathe real estate. I love it from an investment standpoint. I love it from a residential standpoint. I love how it allows me to bring joy into the lives of families. And so I live and breathe day to day, 24/7 real estate. Now, if you come to me with an audiology related question, I can put my audiology hat on and step back into that role at any time. And until a few years ago, I still did a tiny bit of contract work for a hearing aid company. Since the pandemic, that has really waned down to nothing. And that's fine with me because I'm 24/7 a realtor, and that's where I get my joy and my peace and all the rewarding part of my job as a as a service provider for the Kingdom community.
Now, let's talk about for just a moment. We've got a couple of minutes left. You're working in a field that right now has been termed a seller's market.
Yes.
And it's a growing, still booming. I don't know if any end is in sight to this boom, but there are many people who are fearful that one day we could see another bubble burst. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I like to get my advice from economists and professionals who look at the statistics and look at the numbers and look at trends and look at the why behind things like that. What I have learned from these professionals that are experts on market trends and on bubbles, so to speak, is that there is not an impending bubble. And here's why. The bubble that we had back in 08 and 09 was caused by a different thing. It was caused by loans being written to people that were truly not qualified for those loans and issues in the lending industry. Without getting into all the details of that, the difference is what we're dealing with right now is simply a supply and demand issue. And nobody is unaware of the fact that Orlando has been struggling to provide affordable housing for years now. But with the pandemic, we've had an influx of people from South Florida come up and from out of state. You may have noticed as you drive around Central Florida, you see more out of state license plates than you probably ever have in the recent past.
Mm-hmm. A lot of them from New York.
Yes, we've had a lot of people because now their businesses are telling them you can work from home, which means they can work from anywhere in a lot of cases. And why wouldn't you want to work from sunny Florida? And so mm-hmm. we have attracted quite a lot of people from out of state, which has even further complicated our supply and demand issue. So we just don't have enough houses for the amount of people who want them. And as we all learned in high school economics, when supply is low and demand is high, prices go up. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're dealing with here. And the definition of a buyer's market is 6 months worth of inventory, meaning you would have enough inventory that would last 6 months before it all sold out if another home didn't come on the market. The definition of a seller's market is anything less than that. Well, we are at 3 weeks worth of inventory right now. So we are so far into a seller's market, there's not a lot of vision for us coming out of it anytime soon because we need builders to produce homes and we need to generate more homes because I don't think the influx of people coming to Florida is going to stop anytime.
Well, one thing we do know that has been affected by that is supply lines. So all of these homes that are needing to be built, some of them, if they can be built at all, they're at a much higher cost because of the supply cost of even wood.
Yes, exactly. The supplies the builders need isn't short demand, and that raises the price of those supplies. Same dynamic is happening there. So the supplies, which raises the home prices even further. So you've got supply and demand in buyers versus sellers. You also have supply and demand with materials and new construction. And this is really causing the prices of homes to go up. And unfortunately, it's pricing some families right out of the market, and they're going to have to be renters until there's an adjustment. But there's no adjustment in the foreseeable future because it's a supply and demand issue. It's not a lending industry issue. Hmm.
Give us your website.
My website is megan.aldridge@exprealty.com.
It's been great to have you here. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Mike. I've appreciated
it. This is a lot of fun to talk and learn from a person who's an expert in both fields. That's all our time. We thank you for being with us. We'll catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike.